The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Seven minutes past 12 midday. Faster Mike, good afternoon. We're in session till 1 on 66-13-68. With a brand new Chief Minister and 48 new cases of COVID yesterday, we now have 476 active cases. Three people are currently in nobles, none of them in ICU. 200 people waiting for the result of a test today and 54 people booked in for a test. From the vaccination dashboard, 65,486 first doses have been administered. 64,008 second doses. 18 people booked in for the next 7 days. And 21,594 shots of vaccine currently in stock with the Department of Health and Social Care. Alfred Cannon has been elected Chief Minister of the Isle of Man. For the next 5 years for this administration, the heir and Michael MHK will be Chief Minister. Members of the Keys voted for the previous Treasury Minister to take the top role over the Education, Sport and Culture Minister, Dr. Alex Allenton, by a poll of 14 votes to 8. Two members spoilt their papers. The two people who spoilt their votes were Mr. Chris Thomas and Mr. John Wannenberg. Mr. Cannon accepting the role of Chief Minister.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Speaker. And can I thank my proposer and seconder for their extremely kind remarks, for which I'm extremely grateful. And I'm also extremely grateful to the many honourable members who've taken the time to speak to me over the past week or so and express their views, both in what they were seeking from a Chief Minister, but also their views about how they thought government should be shaped in the future. And indeed, I look forward to working with all honourable members in the coming days to firm up our plans. Can I also thank Dr. Allenson for the professional manner and considerations he's given during the short campaign around this important election, and I wish him well for the future. Mr. Speaker, it falls to me now, and I accept this role with humility, but also with a strong sense of purpose, to harness the collective will and determination of all members to do the very best for our island. I look forward to working with everybody to bring forward the best policies and drive the government to ultimately deliver and succeed and build a secure and sustainable and vibrant island for the future. Thank you.
There he is, your new Chief Minister, Alfred Cannon, MHK, for Eyre and Michael. Any thoughts on what you've heard so far as well? The votes cast, by the way, for Dr. Allenson were obviously Dr. Allenson himself, Daphne Kane, Claire Christian, Joni Farragher, Michelle Haywood, Laurie Hooper, Sarah Maltby, and the Speaker, Juan Watterson, all voted for Dr. Allenson. For Mr. Cannon, it was Mr. Ashford, Mrs. Barber, Mr. Callister, Mr. Cannon himself, Mrs. Corlett, Mr. Crookall, Ms. Edge, Mr. Glover, Mr. Johnston, Ms. Lord Brennan, Mr. Morehouse, Mr. Peters, Mrs. Poole Wilson, and Mr. Smith. The spoilt ballots were Chris Thomas and John Wannenberg. Then there was a confirmatory vote. 21 members voted for, 3 voted against the confirmatory vote. The ones who voted against were Joni Farragher, Sarah Maltby, and John Wannenberg. So there you have the new Chief Minister. Have you got any thoughts on where we're going to go? We've obviously had lots of politics over the past 3 months, and it's been concentrated into the last week or so with the election of the Chief Minister. Now the Chief Minister has to sort out a Council of Ministers, has to get together the team to move forward. I wonder what we're going to get. We haven't, there's a message in from Tony, just said we've had 6 months of being told how important our votes are in the election, then two MHKs spoil their papers. It makes me angry. Well, Mr. Thomas and Mr. Wannenberg are allowed to do that. You can not vote for anybody. Is it because this is Andy who just said, why did Chris Thomas and John Wannenberg spoil their ballot papers in the chief minister election? Because they're principled people, perhaps? What do other listeners think? Text on 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com. Call 66 13 68 is a message in. Just said, I think it's terrible news about the waterfall. Four terraced houses. What next? Eh? They'll be closing the Glen. We'll get to the Glen May, to the waterfall in Glen May shortly, but I don't think they're ever going to close the Glen to residents of Glen May. Lots of people love to visit the Glen as well. Food stores, post office and a decent pub restaurant is what they need in Glen May, and it's what's disappeared, really. A poor start to a new administration. Two MHKs can't be bothered to vote in the election of a new chief minister. They were both put into Tymal to make tough decisions. They shirked the first one, says John. Members spoilt their papers, so if they can't make a decision between two people, it doesn't look good for their futures as MHKs, says Kevin. You are allowed to spoil your paper, by the way. It is something of a statement as well. Glen May Glen at the moment is shut, says our correspondent. We'll get on to the waterfall at Glen May because, crikey, times have changed in Glen May, haven't they? Glen May, is it a place you just drive through now? What is the social centre in Glen May? If you joined us yesterday, we were talking about the situation with the COVID schools, with the island schools. Many schools across the island have reported high levels of absences, both staff and students. 328 students and 30 members of staff tested positive for COVID-19 since the start of term, as of the end of last week. Now, some people have criticised the education department for its communication strategy of advising mitigations like face coverings rather than making face coverings mandatory. Seems some people like to be told what to do. So the Director of Public Health, Dr. Henrietta Ewart, clarifies this. Is this a move that should be taken? Is it time to tell people what to do regarding face coverings?
Ultimately, that's obviously a political decision, and it will be something that, as you say, our incoming administration will no doubt want to revisit. There are all sorts of issues here. One is about the role of government in people's lives and making sure that one only steps in to mandate things when there is a clear and present issue that needs immediate and strong action. I think, thinking of COVID, we have to think that we have to learn how to live with this virus. It is going to become endemic, and doing sort of stop-start approaches, mandating things, then relaxing things, doesn't really help and risks interrupting daily life in a way which becomes more of a problem than the thing we're trying to protect ourselves against. Obviously, respiratory viruses, they are a thing that recurs every year, and COVID is probably going to be in that mix long term. Whether it will be seasonal or not, we don't yet know, but it is going to be around with us for a very long time. The main thing that we're concerned about at the moment is not so much the level of infections per se, it's how that is translating into serious illness and the need for hospitalisation. So we do have to keep stressing that the vaccination programmes are the strongest pillar of our defence against this.
From your perspective as Director of Public Health, do you want to see mandatory mitigations whilst the vaccination programme is further strengthened? What's the balance between the duty to what's right for the public and then what the politicians want?
It is always difficult because we do know with COVID that the kind of mantra is you need to go harder and faster than you might think you need to or want to. So we always do have to bear that in mind, and our politicians, the previous administration, were aware of that and took that into account, and I'm sure the incoming one will do so as well. But at the moment, I think from a public health perspective, the message is for everybody to think about how this plays out for themselves in terms of where they want to go and socialise. Do they want to avoid high risk high crowded areas? Do they not? And how do they feel about the use of a face covering, trying to maintain social distancing? And of course, for everybody, thinking about hand hygiene, cough and sneeze hygiene, and so on.
Is it better, do you think, to actually tell people what to do? Do you remember last year, this time last year, we were under the Emergency Powers Act? Oh, crikey, that was a previous Chief Minister and a previous Lieutenant Governor. We were under emergency powers and we were told what to do. I mean, short of vaccination wasn't mandatory, obviously, but, you know, masks were, you know, kind of almost insisted on. I don't know whether you think now is the time or whether you think the time is now to walk away and to assume personal responsibility. It's a difficult one, isn't it? And you heard what Dr. Ewart was saying. It's a political decision. This is all underpinned by the vaccination program. But again, lots of people are choosing not to be vaccinated. Absolutely their choice. But how does that square with the future of our national health on the Isle of Man? Nobody knows ultimately, because nobody knows how this virus and associated viruses are going to behave. They're saying at the moment, I don't know whether you've picked up on the skeet, that there's a bad cold going around the island, that there is a particularly nasty cold going around. Now, that may, you know, be followed by the flu, and then on top of it, there may be different strains of COVID. Morning, we can't expect students to wear a mask all day long. Doing so depletes their oxygen supply, and there are studies which reveal mask wearing may actually increase the spread of COVID, says Alison. I work in a secondary school, and any students wearing a mask fiddle with it and touch their face many more times than normal. They take it off to eat and drink and place it on the table. Surely that's really unhygienic. Lots of correspondence in about Mr. Cannon, which I'll get to as the show goes on. I also want to talk about the waterfall. But as Steve just said, we'd like to see the election reform before the next election. All MHK should be required to declare an interest in one of four key positions, I think, says Steve, Chief Minister, Treasury Minister, Health Minister and Infrastructure Minister. All MHK should then issue their manifestos so the island can elect those on an island-wide mandate. All posts should be for a limited time, maybe 4 years, so the island can start to properly hold ministers and departments accountable. Taking this further, senior civil servants of these departments could be elected. Senior civil servants elected, my word. Is that a bit complicated? Well, electoral reform has happened in the past. We had STV a while back, a single transferable vote. Is now the time to be thinking about, well, I suppose always, is it? It's always good to think about democracy. It's Tony now. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
I'm fine. So what's on your mind now? What do you think of the new Chief Minister?
Well, I think the Chief Minister needs to tell us what he's going to do rather than tell us what he'd like to do. I don't have a lot of faith in any of the government, but the basic thing is he gets a chance. So he needs to decide how we're going to get away from all the debt, what he's going to do about the departments that don't do what they should do. I think electing them all is a good idea. Get rid of them all and start all over again, because I think half of them are incompetent. But what I really called for was the comment from Dr. Ewart. It's a political decision to wear a mask, she says. Is that not what she said?
No, I think she said it's a political decision to mandate people.
Okay. Well, does she recommend, because she waffled around in circles and didn't seem to say whether it was a good idea or not, because when we started out with this about 2 years ago, was it? I can't remember how long ago. It's been going on forever. They turned around and said, oh, no, wearing a mask is no good at all, doesn't do anything. Then it went round to, well, you shouldn't wear a mask because it doesn't do any good. And now, all of a sudden, well, it's up to you. Do what you want. We don't care. As a medical person, she should have a judgment on whether wearing a mask is a good thing or not. If you have any sort of environment where things can be transmitted, e.g. a hospital, or anywhere else in shops where there's close quarters, you should be wearing a mask. That's what she should be recommending. And yet she doesn't.
So you'd like to hear a kind of leading from the front attitude?
Well, Andy, why are we paying these people if they don't give us advice that's sensible? Why are they in the position? It's just hard to believe. I have an opinion, but I'm not going to tell you. This comes back to our previous administration and, well, all the advice from our so-called best sources is secret.
Mm.
It beggars belief that a chief medical officer doesn't say where you should and where you can, if possible, wear a mask. What is wrong with that? Nothing.
Are you wearing a mask, Tony?
I wear a mask when I go into ShopRite. I wear a mask regularly if I'm in close contact in any shops. I carry one with me all the time. I don't walk around with it on, obviously. But I do wear a mask, yeah. And I think that's the sensible thing to do. If you go to a hospital or you go to an emergency, are they wearing masks? Of course they are. So why are they wearing masks? To prevent infection and transmissibility. Well, why wouldn't we do that in general? It beggars belief that these people can't give us an opinion without prevaricating. I just can't believe it.
Do you think they're not telling us to wear a mask? They're not mandating mask wearing because, obviously that would need to be under emergency powers. We're not under emergency powers. Do you think they don't want to be seen to tell everybody what to do?
That's fine, but I don't expect them to tell me what to do. I expect them to give me recommendations as what they think is best practice. I don't think it's too far for somebody who's a chief medical officer to stand up and say, I personally would recommend that where you can and where it suits you, and if you're in close quarters, wear a mask. That's the recommendation. That's not mandated. It doesn't have to be mandated. People need to use their own sense. And there'll be people who can't wear a mask or don't want to wear a mask. And that's up to them. But the recommendation, there isn't one. Where's the recommendation from Dr. Ewart? I didn't hear one. Did you?
I just wonder why it's not that why they equivocate, why it's not unequivocal. Why don't they just say, wear a mask? Or they could just say, don't bother.
Yeah, but they don't do either. I mean, last year, it was don't bother because they don't do any good. Basically because they were scared we'd all grab a mask and the health service would be short, which is ridiculous because there's millions of masks out there now. But the point is, what I'm trying to get to is, they don't seem to be willing to be a leader. None of them want to say something that then somebody will have to question. She doesn't have to say you have to wear a mask. She needs to say it is recommended. I personally, that would be her opinion, which is what I want to hear. I want to hear her opinion. I don't want to hear her telling me it's a political decision, because it's not. She's a chief medical officer. She's supposed to be leading the medical profession in this country. And she's not. What she's doing is saying, well, it's political, so I won't say anything.
Okay.
It's not political. Political is mandated. But a recommendation doesn't have to be mandated. And this is what's wrong and has been wrong with the government. The government, none of it is open government. We'd never get to hear half of what goes on or is told to them because it's a secret. I just hope that Alfred Cannon just stops all this and says, right, we need to be open, we need to tell everybody what's going on, and this is what we're going to do. What do you think, Andy?
I think we're going to find out what sort of chief minister we've got.
Well, I sincerely hope he's better than the last one, and I would hope that he can stand up to all of the, shall we say, the political issues that have prevented things happening before. And I would support him 100% if he started to do that. And I think most of the people in the Isle of Man would as well.
OK, all right. Tony, thanks for being with us today.
You take care, Andy.
Okay, 26 minutes past 12. Here's a note in. Just said it's Mr. Wallenberg and Mr. Thomas's democratic right to spoil the ballot paper if they don't agree with the process or the person, obviously. Why would you spoil your paper, says June. Come on, let us know why you did this. I voted for Chris Thomas, bits disappointed with this. No doubt Mr. Thomas will be telling us. Of course, if you feel nobody's worthy of your vote, you should make a point, make a statement that you're not happy. We're humans, not sheep. So well done to Mr. Wallenberg and Mr. Thomas for trying to make a difference and to change, says Steve. Can you ask, is the Peel Reserve power station powered by oil? So are we not exposed to the gas situation, says Mary. No, I think the Peel power station is diesel, isn't it? As much life as it's got left in it as well. And thank you for the person who sent me the photo of the sludge lake on the back of Peel Power Station. It's where the silt's being kept at the moment. 44,000 tonnes of silt from Peel Marina in that field at the back of the power station, which eventually is going to go to Turkeylands by the airport. Maybe the two who sport their papers would be better off being backbenchers and not affect, won't be offered a ministerial post. Let's hope this is 939 who WhatsApped in or emailed in, I think. Let's hope Mr. Cannon has the power to overhaul Bus Vannin and replace the management team with a team who act responsibly and with accountability. I think the current management team are losing the taxpayers' money and don't have any care for the well-being of the drivers. Tell us why you think that. Afternoon, Andy, says Ben. Question for all the people complaining about the two sport ballots. Would these people still have voted for both of the people standing if they didn't represent the values and views of the voters, says Ben. My children, says Simon, visited the UK recently and we drove from Laxey over to Glenmay to see the waterfall and found it roped off with no access. Disappointing. Haven't read anything about the Glen being closed beforehand as well. And also, says Simon, surely spoiling your ballot paper is the equivalent of none of the above. Well, I want to go to the waterfall because I've got lots of correspondence regarding the waterfall at Glenmay. And MHK says it's not necessarily the end of the road for this historic Manx pub. Despite it not receiving protected status, the Waterfall Hotel in Glenmay dates back to the 1860s. It won't be added to the Protected Buildings Register and it remains under potential threat of demolition. Rob Pritchard has the detail.
The pub was issued with a building preservation notice in June, temporarily protecting it from demolition while investigations were carried out. However, government has now confirmed the venue won't be added to the Protected Buildings Register, saying it didn't demonstrate the special architectural interest required. The site has also been the subject of several planning applications. The most recent application, which is under appeal, proposes to knock down the building and construct four terraced houses in its place. However, Glenn Faber and Peel MHK Tim Crookall believes this doesn't mean it's the end of the story for the pub. Mr. Crookall thinks it still has the potential to be a vital asset to the area.
Most of the people in the area during canvassing and that, there's a lot of thought about what could happen to the building. There's a lot of people would like to see it revert or go back to being a pub, of course, because it was very successful in its day. But there's other thoughts as well, because the village has lost its shop and the post office, and it could even, you know, there was also once a cafe there in the car park. So, I mean, there's still plenty of use that could be made of the building, but it obviously needs to be purchased and then quite a bit of money spent on it, renovating it. But all of it's doable. It's just a case of getting people together, the right people to talk about it and see if we can come to some conclusion. Yeah, and you've got to go back sort of probably 10 years ago to when the pub was in its heyday. You know, the Glen was always full of people walking there in the evenings, in the summer evenings and the weekends and stuff. It was just a really busy, vibrant place and it could rejuvenate that. And there was also talk as well during the canvassing that and at the hustling meeting out there at Glenmay that, you know, there was the potential for some sort of an exhibition being put on in the building as well as it being the pub or a cafe and the shop. So, you know, there's plenty of potential there. And it was mentioned to government about getting involved as well as the locals. But that hasn't been taken any further over the summer, but we'll certainly be looking to resurrect that. And maybe we can get a group of the locals who want to work together and with the developers and see if they'll take it any further.
A DEFA spokesperson says they appreciate the site will hold sentimental value for some members of the public. However, they add the building itself has not passed the test for registration.
So is sentiment enough? Is it enough just to remember the waterfall as it was? What next for the waterfall? Well, what next for Glenmay? Tim Crookall, MHK, was talking about. No shop, no post office, cafe once upon a time, no waterfall now. What's next for, if you live in Glenmay, where's the fun in Glenmay these days? And Tim Crookall was also talking about potentially getting a group together to talk, well, it's going to be bought first. Who's going to put forward the money, the capital, the funds to buy the waterfall? And then put it together. It's possible to do stuff as a community pub. People can club together if you've got the time, if you want to put the effort in, if you've got the gumption to run a pub as well. But somebody's got to want to do it. Just saying, we love the waterfall as it was, isn't it a shame? Really, is that enough? I got a letter in regarding my card. And the letter writer says to me, what's happened to the post office? My wife and I went to collect our pension from last Friday at Port Jack. We used my card. And while we were there, we were informed that there was a form for anyone that wants to disagree with the proposed decision to stop pensions being paid by the use of my card, which we find excellent. Problem is, there were only 10 forms issued, which they had run out of. Surely we can all have our say. We find it distasteful, a bit underhanded, really. We think that this is a backdoor to get rid of my card. Another blow to the seniors? Well, this survey was launched, I think it was last Monday, a week ago yesterday, which aims to understand why some people choose to collect benefits and pension in cash using my card rather than have them paid directly into a bank account or on a prepaid card. Now, this short survey, 8 questions, if you collect benefits and pensions at a sub-post office, you're encouraged to take part. Paper copies are available to fill in at the post offices and Social Security reception area at Markwell House in Douglas or at the Town Hall. So to my correspondent, really, if they aren't at the post offices, Social Security reception area at Markwell House in Douglas or Ramsey Town Hall, you get a prepaid envelope as well. For it to be. You can also go online at consult.gov.im where you can download it as well. If you've got a written comment, you just send it by post to My Card Survey, Social Security, First Floor, Markwell House, Market Street, Douglas, IM13RZ. You have until the 31st of October when the clocks go back. What's that, a couple of weeks on Sunday? So that address, once again, is My Card Survey, Social Security, First Floor, Markwell House, Market Street, Douglas, IM12RZ. New Chief Minister, and wasn't it a shame about Trevor Hemming?
Majestic food, majestic views. The majestic Chinese restaurant Douglas. Fabulous Chinese and Cantonese cuisine in great surroundings with private hire available too. Call 682-791 to book or search Majestic Chinese Douglas on Facebook.
Local business? Nicola Bowker & Co. Need an accountant? Nicola Bowker & Co. Want accounts you can trust? Nicola Bowker & Co. Whether a sole trader or large company, for your free initial meeting, call today on 861-271.
When you're looking for your next dream vehicle, come to Rex Motor Company. Whether it's sales or leasing, servicing or detailing, we're on hand and ready to help. We have new stock arriving daily, so no matter what you're looking for, we're your one-stop shop for all your motoring requirements. Come to our showroom in Whitehoe Industrial Estates just off the Old Castle Town Road or visit rexmotorcompany.im. That's rexmotorcompany.im. Rex Motor Company, for all your motoring needs.
At Southern Home and Gardens in Ballasalla, you'll find everything you weren't looking for. Plants for that part of the garden you've not gotten round to yet. Throw pillows you didn't even realise you needed. Tools and DIY accessories for that project you completely forgot you're supposed to be doing. Bedding that you didn't know you wanted, but you actually really, really want it. At Southern Home and Gardens, we don't stock products, we stock inspiration. Come and see us in the Balvane Estate, Ballasalla, or find out more at southernhome.co.uk.
Conister Bank are proud to be part of Isle of Man Government's Disruption Loan Guarantee Agreement, supporting businesses affected by the pandemic. Conister Bank has helped many local businesses to survive and continue to trade. The scheme has now been extended until March the 31st, 2022. So if your business has been affected and you require financial support, we're here to help, even if you're not an existing customer. Call Conister
register now on 694 694 or apply via our website. Terms and conditions apply.
Tonight here on Max Radio at 6 o'clock, join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, for Countryside.
Last week I went to a workshop by the Manx Wildlife Trust on the delivery of the Agri-Environmental Scheme.
We chat about Mental Health Awareness Week, and also I popped along to the signing of Howard Parkin's new book, Space for Dark Skies, at the Bridge Bookshop in Ramsey.
That's all in Countryside tonight here on Manx Radio at 6 o'clock. Download and subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Fast am I, 23 minutes before one. Alistair's with us now. Hello, Alistair.
Oh, hello, Andy. Yes. I have a couple of things I wanted to say. The first one is just how pleased I feel that that Alf Action Cannon, as I call him, has actually succeeded in becoming Chief Minister. Because I do think, knowing Alf as I do, that he will be exceptionally good for this island, because he has an international flair about him with international contacts. And I thought just how unusual it is that with his military background, with what which a lot of people don't realize, that we should have a lieutenant governor also with military background. And so that's a very good start, I would think, for Alf. And I think that we will all be very pleased when we come to the end of his five-year term. I really do think there will be something to look back and say, well, he did well.
Well, what do you think in particular, Alistair, that he has that the previous one didn't have?
Well, the different people, the different type of people. Howard, who I've got a lot of respect for, don't get me wrong on that, and he was my constituency MP, MHK, but of course they do come from different backgrounds. And, you know, Howard has more of a agricultural type background. I think Alf has more of a business-type background, having been in business himself, both here and in London. And I do feel that the connections he has in the London area will bring a big, big benefit to the island.
Okay.
But anyhow, let's wait and see. But I do think he's the right man for the job. Now, going on from there, the one thing I did want to say about it is that is there any way that we can speed this process up at an election? I mean, we had an election here on the 23rd of September. We have finally got a chief minister today. But believe me, you know as well as I do, Andy, that that could have been Friday before we had a chief minister. Then the chief minister has to get ministers in place. When do we actually get to work to get the action that is required? Seems to me to be a long, long time. And I would like to have thought that there could be some method in the future of speeding that process up a bit.
I would assume that Mr. Cannon has been working over foolscap sheets of paper over the past week, figuring out who he'd be offering jobs to, though, wouldn't you?
I would have thought so, but then having said that, you know, it's still going to take time to get them in place and to get it all. But I would have thought the whole process could have been speeded up from the day after the election. But I don't know. I mean, I'm no expert on these matters.
What would you say Mr. Cannon's first priority is?
Well, his first priority, I would imagine, has got to be the economy. And knowing Alf, I think that will be his first priority. And the other thing I think that he will be very, very good at, and he will choose the right minister to do the job, and that is to try and cut down on, well, at least to get all these projects done on time and on budget. And I would think that would be one of Alf's big priorities. But I don't know, because I haven't spoken to him about it, but I would suggest that could very well be his main priority.
So, on balance, you're optimistic about the future?
Yes, I am, but then I always have been. I mean, I've been across for 5 days last week. You couldn't be anything else but optimistic if you went over there and seen what's going on over there.
In particular, what struck you about across?
Well, it's just basically that there's so much time wasted because of the traffic chaos everywhere. The amount of time that must be wasted in productivity in the UK must be phenomenal. And we don't have that problem here. And believe you me, we should be very, very grateful that we are living here.
Okay. All right, Alistair, thanks for calling.
But there's one thing else I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Is I honestly think, I cannot understand why this COVID vaccinations are not mandatory for children.
When you say children, what age?
Well, what age were we vaccinated when we went to school?
Well, I mean, children get vaccinated.
Andy, it was mandatory.
Yeah.
Now, why should it not be mandatory now?
Well, children are offered vaccinations from, what, the age of one nowadays. I mean, the combined diphtheria, polio and what have you.
Exactly. So why can't this COVID be mandatory?
You think it should be mandatory?
This disease we've got here.
Yeah, you think this should be mandatory?
Yes, without a doubt. And I don't think it should ever have been anything else.
Okay. All right, thanks, Alistair.
Thank you.
All right, 17 minutes before one. The centre of Glenmay, the social centre of Glenmay, is the Methodist Church, says this correspondent. If the community there wants a shop, a pub or a cafe, why don't they set up a co-op style business and seek some crowdfunding? Now, if people can't be bothered to do that, why should anybody step in to invest in things like the waterfall as well? No way's my daughter wearing a mask all day in school. We're living with it, not hiding from it. Masks carry bacteria and would likely make you sick as well. The wildlife is suffering, being tangled up there as well, with all the masks being discarded on the floor. Disgusting things. Why are people throwing masks on the floor? John said, Alf Cannon, best candidate for chief minister by a country mile. Best of luck to him, says John. I'll pass that on to you. Nice to hear the director of public health having a say on the radio station rather than the minister stealing her thunder, says Paul. I'm sure it's not like that. I'm sure they're all pulling on the same rope. Jane says, I totally understand spoiling papers or abstaining from the first vote, but Joni Farragher, Sarah Motby and John Wannenberg voting against in the confirmatory vote is a bit petulant. Are they just trying to be objectors in principle to everything? Well, they're certainly putting a marker down. I really hope not, because we're never going to progress. As we're a bit disappointed, well, very disappointed, very, very disappointed in their behaviour, says Jane on 123. I think Henrietta should get off the political fence and be a good doctor. Students need to wear masks in school at all times to protect the teachers. Regards, Rob. By the way, in Scotland, it is mandatory. I think that every democratic voting slip should include the option of none of the above as a protest vote, says David H. Abrogation of duty, Dr. Ewart swore an oath. Do no harm. Politics shouldn't come into it. She has, as her job role describes, she should be shouting public health messaging in a pandemic. I can understand, this is Charles, says, I can understand why 2MHK sport their papers, but I don't agree the system is correct. I believe where there's a vote between a small choice of candidates, be it local MHKs or even votes for chief minister, there should be an option of none of the above. If none of the above gets enough votes when the ballot should be rerun with new candidates, in my opinion, this is a better option than spoiling a paper, says Charles. In Riyadh in Saudi Arabia at the moment. How's the weather, Charles? Don't tell me. Hot. So are we going to be told to live with COVID, says Sharon. Well, tell that to the families who've lost a family member due to COVID. And Ruth dropped me a note in just to say, Andy, one of my sons and family very ill with norovirus at the weekend, whilst we've been isolating with the COVID virus. It seems the bugs are coming out. I agree with Tony, says 640. Dr. Ewart should be advising us. She's supposed to be our expert. Face coverings are political because we are too vain in the West to wear face coverings, says Steve T as well. Here's Gaz. Andy, double jab people are reportedly in the UK press as suffering bad cold symptoms when actually they've been have and are spreading COVID. Fever, cough, headache are now lesser identified symptoms. COVID symptoms should be updated by public health. Man in line until one today. We have a brand new Chief Minister, Alfred Cannon.
Van arriving. Been internet shopping again, missus?
No, Ewan. That Spectrum window's coming to repair our side window.
What happened?
Well, Geoffrey only went and reversed the tractor into it. He's not been seen for dust since. I think he's hiding in the chicken coop.
Geoffrey, come and admire this quality repair that Spectrum windows are doing. Here, chicken. Here, chicken.
For speedy glazing repairs and more, visit spectrumwindows.im or the showroom Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
When you need a fitting memorial or headstone for a loved one, contact Manx Memorials in Peel. This long-standing family-run Manx company offer a wide range of granite and marble headstones and memorials, along with an island-wide inscription and renovation service. Manx Memorial's skilled professionals will take the time to help you choose a suitable memorial, and we're proud to say we'll beat other local quotes. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
As the nights draw in, tis the season of warm and cosy. Miller Chaps of Ramsey have plump pillows, cushions and throws to bring new textures to your home. Sink into a beautiful new sofa and read in the warm glow of a new lamp, or curl up on a deep pure wool rug as you drink hot chocolate and watch your favourite film. At Miller Chaps, you always find superb quality, so love your home this autumn with treats for you. A host of special offers from Millie Chaps.
Millie Chaps of Ramsey.
Are you a reluctant landlord? Tired of tenant hassles? Cursed by constant maintenance? Tormented by empty properties producing no rent? Want to escape these worries or get out altogether?
At Prime Lettings, we understand your pain and have bespoke solutions to release you from these problems. Ring us on 616 707 for a free confidential chat.
Prime Lettings. We're on call and on the ball at 616 707.
Later this month on Manx Radio, listen out for our Spooker Market Scream competition, where you can win a spooky Hop Tune hamper courtesy of ShopRite to ensure your Hop Tune celebrations are ghoulish and grisly. Keep listening to find out more on your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
10 to 1, a note in from David, who said, regarding the traffic jam at the Cool roundabout, how can the DOI not get traffic lights right? Four lanes of traffic feeding into one roundabout by B&Q, three lanes, not a line of traffic, fourth lane from the Braid, 4 miles long. Doesn't take a genius to get three lanes at 3 minutes and then the busy lane at 6 minutes. And nobody in sight at 8:48 this morning. Were you stuck at B&Q this morning? Oh, here's David with us now. Hello, David.
Oh, hi, mate. Listen, I was just going to quickly there, you prompted me to say, Tony Brown said to me ages ago that when the DOI had a policy, when there were major traffic lights, they were operated manually. So that's a cue that maybe the next DOI minister, or maybe we should put Mr. Thomas, if he's so concerned about not voting for anybody and abstaining all the time, make him the DOI minister, or the chairman of the post office, or the OFT. And I'm sure that'll cure him, because he never delivers. But anyway, that's my personal opinion, not of the commissioners either. Can I just say congratulations to Mr. Cannon? He wants to work with the community. I worked with Mr. Cannon when I was in Parliament there. I always thought he was square, right down the middle. If he didn't like things, he'd tell you. and when he wanted to move things on, he would tell you. And what we need to do now is he needs to get his ministers together, and the test, the acid test, is going to be for these politicians, where they get into a department, or whether they want to get into a department, or whether we're going to have a little gaggle of bank benchers that just want to fire bullets and ask questions.
Well, so are you optimistic about the future then with Mr. Cannon there?
I certainly am. The best thing you've got with Mr. Cannon too, he'll talk to you. And that's the biggest thing you can get with a politician, who will not say, well, it's always this way. They'll always seek a different opinion than maybe they want to go down, or they test the quality. He's not been afraid. And I'm just catching up because I was playing bowls this morning. That'll give people a little thing down at the ANSC, which is now open, and the cafe doesn't look that great, but never mind, that's another story. And I didn't see the flumes in action, just to let you know. But I'm still back onto you, maybe towards the end of the week, about what we should be doing for the future. Let's zone the Isle of Man up. Let's see what we want for Onchan, all around the north. Ramsey, if Ramsey don't want a harbour, or they don't want a marina or whatever, let's move on. You know, things have got to be done, and we've got to press some buttons while there's some people there, and some people want to come to the island. And the biggest thing, too, is saddened about the millionaire that died. You know, great lad, lived in the Isle of Man. And, you know, some people say, oh, the millionaires thing. We have millionaires who love the Isle of Man, come to the Isle of Man, take part in the Isle of Man, run business in the Isle of Man. They don't do us a lot of harm. Sometimes they do us a lot of good.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. I just want to put this forward in front of you as well, considering the good that the Isle of Man can do for other people. Now, four yachts set sail from Douglas Marina on Sunday on the leg of a sailing adventure for military veterans. We facilitated this in Douglas on Sunday. They turned to starboard. Charity boats are on the homeward bound leg of the Long Way Down trip. Chris Pearson went to meet them.
The yachts sailed from Falmouth, hoping to reach John O'Groats in Scotland, but bad weather forced them to stop at Troon instead. There, the group of tri-service veterans who sailed northwards swapped for another group of veterans for the return trip. The teams arrived on the Isle of Man last Thursday and have spent a few days exploring the island. Mike Stevenson is an ex-marine engineer with the Royal Navy. He's acting as watchkeeper on one of the boats.
Yeah, as guys, we don't tend to open up easy. And, you know, we always used to say that when women talk, they go face-to-face over a cup of coffee. And when guys are talking, it's best if you're doing something side-by-side. So leaning over a bar or sailing, you know, when you're both facing the same way. And every now and then you drop into conversation, why are you here, what are you doing? We haven't had any really deep and meaningfuls yet, but we've, on our boat, certainly a few wounds have been just touched and without exploring.
Ray Hartley is an ex-fusilier. He was on his first ever sailing trip after suffering mental health issues when he left the army.
It's so peaceful and it's away from the stress. And when you're on a boat, like a yacht, like I've learned this week, you gel together and you help each other. And it's like being back in the forces, but it's not. You can have a bit of banter and carry on, and you don't feel ashamed, whereas certain places make you feel like you're a leper. I'm sorry if I should say that, but they do, whereas these don't. And honestly, this has been a...
So it sounds like it's all the best bits of being in the military without all the rubbish that goes with it.
It is, but it gives you confidence. And it gives you something back.
What is it you feel that you'll take away from this, Ray?
Confidence, massively.
And presumably a new bunch of mates as well.
Yeah, but it's like you haven't been forgotten. No one's forgot about you.
They had a whale of a time, let me tell you. The four yachts that were in, you may have seen the Douglas Marina on Sunday. Those four yachts. The sailing adventure for military veterans. They had a whale of a time on the Isle of Man. And they asked me to pass on thanks to everybody who helped them. The waterfall situation wouldn't happen in the Lake District, says this correspondent. And also, hopefully, the Chief Minister, this is Texter 520, the next Chief Minister, will privatise Manx Gas as an island. We need to protect ourselves from organisations and from the market they control. Regulating gas is unlikely to have the teeth needed to make a difference. Come on, Chief Minister, make it a first priority. And a note in from Richard who said, stop talking about the promenade being finished at the end of November. The only way the promenade will be completed is when the horse trams can be driven all the way to the sea terminal. That's it for Man in Line. Back tomorrow at 12 midday. Thanks to Ben Hartley producing. I'm Andy Wint. And remember, we're always on duty here. W.